From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. You are too kind. Thank you. We have got a great show for you today. It's maybe even a little historic this week. General Michael Hayden, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, will be joining us to play our quiz, and he has agreed beforehand to abide by our rules. He will not be allowed to get the answers to our questions by monitoring my thoughts via my fillings. They turned that box off. We don't know what you're thinking, but we're hoping it's that you're going to call us up and play our games. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to start the show with our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello. This is Kelly Hicks from Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville.
Yes.
What do you do there in Nashville?
Well, I'm a film archivist at the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum.
Oh, really? So you're collecting all the film clips and video of all the great country music artists.
Yeah, I am.
That's cool. Do you actually enjoy country music?
I do. I'm not from Nashville originally, but I do like some country music.
You like some country music? You sound a little hesitant about the country music thing.
I think I'm more more into the older country music than the newer thing.
I see.
But
okay.
I save it all.
More Merle Haggard than Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I think that's accurate.
Well, we have Garth Brooks right here, and he is mad. Well, welcome to our show, Kelly. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, it's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hello.
And next, say hello to humorist, author, and the man responsible for everything you might find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hello, Kelly.
Hi.
And finally, it's the comedian who has just released her first ever comedy CD. It's called I Heart Jokes. Details are on her website at www.paulapoundstone.com. Paula Poundstone!
Hey, Paula.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Kelly, welcome to the show. You are going to start us off with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will recreate for you three pungent quotes from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. You will win our prize, Carl's voice in your home answering machine.
Oh, good.
Ready to go?
I am.
All right. For your first quote, we present the majesty of the democratic process in action.
I've got this thing, and it's bleeping golden. And I'm just not giving it up for bleeping nothing. They're not willing to give me anything except appreciation. Bleep them.
This is a quote Carl was born to do because he's had all this practice doing bleep on all those answering machines. So that was a man hoping to make a little something on the Senate seat once held by Barack Obama. Who?
I think that was the Illinois Governor Blagojevich.
Blagojevich, we've all learned to say his name. How nice is that? The first indication that something was wrong came early Tuesday, when the eBay auction for the U.S. Senate seat from Illinois was suddenly suspended. Then federal agents arrested Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich. He came peacefully, but his hair made a run for it and had to be brought down by marshals with tranquilizer darts. Now, I should say that we Chicagoans are not shocked so much by the governor's extraordinary corruption. No, we're amazed at how bad he is at it. Every grammar school in Chicago offers mandatory lessons on what not to say on a tapped phone line. Things may still get worse for the governor. He apparently also accepted an offer on Senator Dick Durbin's seat, even though Durbin is still in it. The person who bought it complained. He said, yeah, that's why I gave you half off, he said.
Yeah, those are futures trading here in
exactly,
Chicago.
Exactly.
You know, I got to say, it's been a year for governors. I mean, between Elliot Spitzer and Sarah Palin, but this guy, I mean, he puts the goober in gubernatorial.
I still think it might have been an accident.
How so?
I don't know. You just can't leap to conclusions.
In this case, I think you can. Yeah.
I was very heartened by this. So were the readers. We had some people write in, and they said, finally, a scandal that I can explain to my child.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. Yeah. Good old-fashioned corruption and greed.
I was thinking, there's no prostitutes involved. There's no, like, snow machine races.
Yeah.
It's the change. Great. It is the change we needed.
The only thing... One of the big questions that came up after everybody read these remarkable transcripts of our governor in action, they said, how did this idiot get elected to two terms in the first place? We know. This is how. Because back in 2002, he ran the most brilliant radio ad ever. Here it is.
Moving Illinois forward means so much to me. I'm tired of those Republicans. They really don't care about me. That's why I'm gonna make that switch to ride LaGoyette.
Is that real?
That's absolutely real.
I was just thinking today, how do you put Blagojevich into a rhyme?
There you go.
You know, and so many bands have covered that.
All right, Kelly, here is your next quote from someone else entirely.
Originally, I wasn't going to stay with NBC, but I remembered what my parents told me. Whatever you do, always try to come in fourth.
That was somebody announcing his new primetime TV show with an optimistic note. Who's going to be even more unavoidable on the tube than he is now?
Is it Jay Leno?
It is Jay Leno.
Oh, okay.
Well done. In a remarkable display of both vision and a lack of faith in their own abilities, NBC executives announced that they were replacing all of their weeknight 10 p.m. hour shows, every single one, and replacing them with the new Jay Leno show, which will be just like the current Tonight Show, except that its audience will now be able to fall asleep and start drooling on their chair 1 hour earlier. So NBC is admitting, in essence, that they can no longer produce original dramas or comedies for that hour that people would want to watch. This is probably because of the disappointing showing of NBC's latest attempts to fill the 10 p.m. slot. Law and Order, Sexy Victims Unit, Dancing with the Stars of Law and Order, and Law and Order, Grey's Anatomy. All right, very good, Kelly. Here is your last quote. Embrace yourself because it is quite ungrateful.
In fact, I wanted to get off the bus after I talked to him.
That was somebody who was made famous during the presidential campaign. He was talking about his deep unhappiness with then-presidential candidate John McCain, who took a big bite out of the hand that made him so well-known.
I don't think I know this one.
We can call him Joe the Ingrate.
I don't have a guess.
You're just giving up?
Nope, I'm giving up.
Perhaps you've already forgotten him, which wouldn't be surprising, but we're talking about Joe the Plumber. It was the McCain campaign that made Joe Walzerbacher into an international symbol of dunderheaded resentment. And what does Joe the Plumber do in return? He told talk show host Glenn Beck that he was, quote, appalled by John McCain's positions in the financial bailout. Mr. Walzerbacher has written a tell-all book in which he says other, so far undisclosed, negative things about his former patron, McCain. He's become the pitchman for a digital TV service. And an even more desperate money-making move, he is now trying to sell what he says is Barack Obama's toilet seat. You see...
No, we got it.
All right. Yeah. In related backstabbing news, McCain's dog, Coco, just landed a book contract for his vengeful tell-all memoir called Fetch It Yourself, Old Man. Carl, how did Kelly do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. Kelly had two correct answers, so Kelly, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Good work, Kelly. Thank you so much for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, sad news for senior citizens. The FDA rejected a proposal this week to classify something as a medical device, meaning it can't be paid for by Medicare.
What?
I mean, the obvious thing would be a walker, but I'm sure they'd cover that.
I'll give you this thing presumably was designed to help cure such illnesses as bored from having not shot anything recently syndrome.
Firearm?
Yes, a handgun.
Oh.
The manufacturer...
Somebody tried to get
the palm pistol handgun listed as a medical device, making it eligible for government reimbursement. This is a one-shot 9mm handgun. It looks like one of those squeeze balls with a barrel sticking out of it. Elderly people who might not have the hand strength to use a traditional gun can aim and fire it easily.
What could go wrong?
It's self-defense.
Puddles, get the ball, get the ball. Oh, my God!
I think if they could combine it with a remote control.
Well, no, it's used. I mean, it's being advertised. Senior citizens can use it to repel a home invader, or they can use it on an insufficiently grateful grandchild, or a nurse who brought the wrong juice. In an attempt to make their gun even easier to use and therefore more appealing to the FDA, the manufacturers are developing a model that is fired via the clapper. Right now, time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Mike Gray from Waco, Texas.
Hey, Mike, how are things in Waco?
They're actually cold, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, it gets that way. Now, Waco is probably the nearest city to Crawford. Is that not right?
Yes, sir.
Right. So do you think that you're going to be seeing more or less of President Bush once he leaves office?
Well, you know, I haven't actually ever seen him except when he was governor.
Yeah.
But we'll definitely see fewer remnants of him.
I see. So all the Bush souvenir shops, for example, probably vanish.
I'm kind of hoping so.
Yeah. Well, Mike, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Mike's topic?
Go ahead, Jack Frost. Just try and nip at my nose.
Are you tired of Santa? Do you see a red nose and want to paint it black? Well, we know just the thing to rekindle that Christmas glow. Each of our panelists will tell you about a new adorable holiday character that's been introduced this year in order to spread a particular brand of holiday cheer. Choose that real story. You'll win Carl Castle's voice on your home answering implement. Ready to play?
Yes, sir.
First up, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
Once a minor character in The Night Before Christmas, Vixen is now the spokes reindeer for a new Christmas campaign to prevent bad boob jobs. The animated Vixen, sporting a red and green bikini and bodacious curves, is the poster girl for the California Association of Certified Plastic Surgeons, which has launched PSAs and billboards promoting responsible cosmetic procedures. Quote, every December, husbands and boyfriends buy bargain basement breast augmentation for the women in their lives, explained Association Chair Dr. Steve Cohen. We wanted to educate them in a festive way. In the 32nd spot, Vixen says, quote, Santa knows who's naughty and nice and who's sexy. If plastic surgery is on your wish list, make sure you're in the right hands, a certified professional.
Vixen, the Sea Cup reindeer. Your next story of a new kid on the Christmas block comes from Paula Poundstone.
The GM in-house magazine Motormouth carried a Christmas story last week to explain the auto company's peril to little ears. Sparky, the little car maker's Christmas wish. Sparky was a chief executive office of a major car company. The company was a magical place with lots of workers who put together big, big cars that they had such fun making and that took lots of gasoline, glug, glug. People loved to drive them. The big, big cars went like hotcakes. Then one day, gas prices went way, way up, and nobody wanted to buy Sparky's cars anymore. He couldn't pay the workers. The spending money in the whole world started to go away. So the brave little CEO went into his big airplane and flew to the North Pole to ask the Christmas elves for a $25 billion loan. But the elves had no Christmas spirit, and they sent Sparky away. He was so sad. He knew the economy of the whole world depended on his company, So he drove back in his big, big car, glug, glug, and he wrote them a note dotted with tears and put it under their tree. Dear elves, all right, I'll take only $15 billion for my company and only give me a dollar.
Aww. Sparky, the auto company CEO, and his Christmas journey. Your last story of a new kid in the Christmas block comes from Tom Baudet.
The American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, ACCCE, or ACC, this week unveiled their new holiday mascot, Frosty the Coal Man. In a nationwide effort to promote their oxymoronic, not really an alternative fuel, the rollout on their website features animated, bug-eyed lumps of coal singing this catchy number. Frosty the Coal Man is a jolly, happy soul. He's abundant here in America, and he helps our economy roll. Frosty the Coal Man is getting cleaner every day. He's affordable and adorable, and he helps workers keep their pay. There must have been some magic in clean coal technology, for when they look for pollutants, there was nearly none to see. Everybody sing, Frosty
the Coal Man. I applaud your Christmas spirit, everyone. All right. Mike, let me review your choices for you. From Roxanne, Vixen, the augmented reindeer. From Paula Poundstone, Sparky, the auto CEO. Or from Tom Baudet, Frosty the Coal Man. Which of these is the real story of a new holiday character to warm you on those cold, long nights?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Frosty the Coal Man. That just sounds so ridiculous, but there's so much stuff going on here in Central Texas with coal.
Right. You wouldn't put it past them. Is that what you're saying?
No, I wouldn't.
All right.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, to bring you the correct answer, we can do nothing better than simply bring you this.
Frosty the Coal Man, he's every day. He's affordable and adorable, and workers keep their pay.
That is catchy. That, of course, was the Frosty the Coal Man jingle from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. Congratulations, Mike, you got it right. Well done. You're into points for Tom. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Well done, sir.
It was a pleasure.
And now the game where we ask very important people about very unimportant things. It's called Not My Job. Retired Air Force General Michael Hayden has been the director of the Central Intelligence Agency since he was nominated by President Bush and confirmed by the Senate in 2006. We are pleased, and we admit a little nervous, to have him join us here. General Hayden, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you very much, Peter. I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, we're happy to have you. So many things we want to talk to you about, the intelligence services where you spent your life. We get most of our image of the intelligence services from the movies. You have a movie like Enemy of the State, in which the NSA is constantly observing everybody for their nefarious purposes. We have a movie like 3 Day of the Condors, in which they're actually killing people in order to destabilize the presidency. So my question to you is, which of those two is it?
that's called a Hobbesian choice.
It is.
Actually, I saw Enemy of the State when I knew I was going to be the director of NSA. I was in Korea. My wife knew, and not many other people knew, and I went to the base theater on a Friday night, crowded with GIs, and watching this movie play out, all I could do was sink down in my seat and hope no one would notice who I was.
Oh, come on. You must have been going, I get to do that? I get to watch everybody with drugstore surveillance cameras and dispatch assassins? I'd be excited. No. So what's it really like? Do you have, like, a holiday party, for example?
Actually, we had 4 holiday parties among our different offices, and we made the rounds. And one of the real upsides is we're kind of organized geographically. So we went from the Kielbasa to the Baba Ghanoush and walked our way through most of the world.
Okay, so let me ask you, though. How seriously do you guys, the CIA, take that Secret Santa thing?
I'm sorry. These are some things I'm just not at liberty to comment
on. There you
on.
Go. Because we imagine you guys are like commandeering satellites to find out what's in the bag, you know.
General, do you mind if I call you 86?
No.
I'm speaking directly.
Personal.
I'm speaking directly into my pen right now, so I assume you can hear me.
Yes.
Now, it apparently is true, though. We were looking into your background, obviously 4 decades in the Air Force, but you yourself were, as they say in the trade, an operative of a kind yourself, weren't you?
I was. I was the air attaché in Sofia, Bulgaria in 1984 to 1986 during the communist period there. And that job is essentially during that period in that country, you're an intelligence collector. That's right.
Really? So you're out like actually spying on people?
We were what was called an overt collector. But we would travel throughout the country, try not to be noticed, see things that we could see, particularly of a military nature, and report them back.
What do you mean, try not to be noticed? How do you do that?
You roll out of bed about 3 in the morning. You don't shave. You slip on yesterday's clothes. You go downstairs. You walk to the train station, try to quietly get on the train and take it from Sofia out to the Black Sea, knowing that armored brigades need train systems in order to service themselves. And you pass by all 4 armored brigades in the Bulgarian military by the time it was mid-morning and you're out on the Black Sea. And you try to do that unnoticed. Just take a look at the brigades as you go by and understand what kind of equipment they have and what kind of readiness status they have.
Oh, but wait a minute. Where in that process do you romance the beautiful women? Because...
I got an answer for that.
Yeah, when?
When I get back home.
Oh, he's good. He's good. That's how he rose so high, by being politic.
General, I have a question. I took my son to the spy museum about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and he had a tantrum, and I was wondering if you have that on film.
I don't know that we do, but let me promise you one thing, Paula. We're never destroying any videotapes ever again.
Oh. None of that. You must know, it occurs to me that you must know some amazing, perhaps even hair-curling serious stuff. Is there anything that you can tell us that would, like, shock and scare us?
We won't tell anybody.
Really?
What's that line? Can you keep a secret?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So can I.
Yeah. Oh, good. Very good. I understand. That's great. So I want to ask you some slightly more serious questions. We know that there's been some talk about keeping you on at CIA. Can you tell us anything about that? Have you heard anything?
What I can tell you is that people like me serve at the pleasure of the president. And, you know, if the president were to ask me to stay on, it's certainly something that I would consider to be an honor, but it's entirely up to him. And, you know, and that's kind of a pro forma answer, but at the heart of the matter is the president's got to be comfortable with the heads of his secret intelligence services. And so it's really the president's call.
Have you done anything to suck up, like send a message to President-elect Obama and say, by the way, if you want to know what Michelle wants for Christmas, we happen to know.
No, but that's an interesting idea.
I'm just saying.
Sir, is it something you wanted to do, like, since you were a little kid?
No, actually, it's you know, I joined the Air Force, and intelligence seemed to fit my academic background and kind of personality bent. And it just led from one assignment to another. And believe me, when the president called me about 2.5 years ago and said, hey, I've been thinking, it was the last thing on my mind.
That he'd been thinking?
You know, that... Ouch!
Believe you said that.
No, I don't believe you took that meaning from it.
What do you mean took that meaning? I heard it clearly. I was speaking right into my
pen.
Mind
that he would ever choose me for this job.
Oh, well, you should have said that.
And when he did, I mean, you know, you got a small range of correct answers to that question.
I understand.
And here I am.
There you are.
You got to look at your post-its a little more carefully.
One last question, General. We know, because you love to talk about it, you're a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
Indeed.
Grew up in Pittsburgh, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they even have a street named for you, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they threw up a sign around Heinz Field for a week or two. Yes, they did.
That's great. Now, it occurs to me, we all remember what happened when it was discovered that the Patriots had been secretly recording the other team's signals.
I did, yeah.
That you have it in your power to... give a little edge to your friend. You ever tempted to send them over a little surveillance, you know, satellite surveillance of the other teams?
Nah, it's, you know, the Steelers are so fundamentally sound, they don't need much help from me.
Really? So you guys absolutely nothing to do with what happened to Tom Brady earlier this season?
No,
absolutely deny it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, General Michael Hayden, we are pleased to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
It's nutritious, delicious, and often comes with a prize.
Everybody in America gets up and starts their day by eating a brimming bowl full of highly processed, crispy, sugared tidbits that are found nowhere in nature. But nobody ever asks why we do that. Well, Mental Floss magazine did. And based on their history of breakfast cereals, we're going to ask you three questions about them. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine.
Okay.
Carl, who is CIA Director Michael Hayden playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Tony Leon of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
All right. Ready to play?
Okay.
All right. Breakfast cereal was first marketed, of course, by W.K. Kellogg. He was challenged by the upstart CW Post. Post started advertising his products, which was a daring move at the time. So Kellogg came back with what successful campaign for his cornflakes? Was it A, he took out ads telling women to, quote, wink at your grocer and see what you get, unquote? Was it B, the slogan, it pleases the mouth and cleanses the bowels? Or was it C, he took out ads claiming that cows who were fed cornflakes gave twice as much milk, so why not try it yourself?
None of those sound especially attractive. I'll go with B.
You're going to go with B. It pleases the mouth and cleanses the bowels.
Yes.
Now, actually, it was A.
Oh.
Women were encouraged to wink at their grocer. In a promotional scheme, if they winked at their grocer, the grocer would turn and hand them a free box of cornflakes.
Oh, my goodness.
Which they would then try. It was a huge thing. They sold millions of boxes. All right. You're still all right.
Okay.
Next question. With more and more cereals appearing on the market, marketers of cereal tried using distinctive names to catch the consumer's eye, such as which of these? Was it A, Rolled E.O. Poly Holy Oats? B, Mackenzie's Vim and Vigor Restoring Wheat Fragments? Or C, University Brand Daintily Crisped Flaked Corn?
I'm going to go with A, Peter.
With A, Rolled E.O. Poly Holy Oats.
Yes.
You are the director of...
Currently, CIA.
You're in CIA. Yes. Central Intelligence Agency. So you know stuff.
Yeah.
You find out stuff.
But apparently not this stuff.
I'm just going to... Actually, no, it was C. It was University Brand Daintily Crisped Flaked Corn.
Oh, my. And I'm not doing very well for Tony at all, am I?
No, not at all.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Last question, though. Here's your last question. You need to get this one. A now-forgotten cereal called Force introduced the first cereal mascot, Sunny Jim. A gentleman in a top hat became a huge hit. So other cereals rushed to create their own mascots, including this maybe ill-advised attempt. A, the box for the cereal called Elijah's Manna included a picture of the biblical prophet Elijah. B, Toothless Joe cereal featuring a picture of a lovable old silver miner. Or C, Teddy Rex's Fortified Chex, a mix of dry corn and walnuts that tried to trade in the image of President Roosevelt.
I'm going with the president on this one.
As you often do. You're going to go with Teddy Rex's Fortified Chex.
Yes.
It was actually Elijah's Manna.
Oh, my goodness. I should have gone with the Holy One.
You should have gone with the Holy One. Absolutely. Carl, how did... General Michael Hayden do on our quiz?
Well, he had a perfect score, Peter. No correct answers. And he needed at least two to win for Tony Leon.
Michael Hayden is a retired four-star Air Force general. He is the director of the CIA. General Hayden, thank you so much for joining us here. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you in your work.
Okay. Thank
you. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. And we're going to begin with a segment we call...
Wait, Wait! Greets our new benevolent overlords.
In which we cover the dawning of the age of Baraquarius. Roxanne, many were saddened, but we were thrilled to see the first official scandal of the Obama administration. Jon Favreau, who is Obama's 27-year-old speechwriter, appeared in a photo on the internet he regretted because in the photo he is doing what?
Copping a feel on Hillary Clinton's cardboard cutout.
Exactly right. Ladies and gentlemen, the audacity of grope. In the photograph, he indeed is feeling up, if you will, a cardboard cutout of Senator Clinton. It happened at a party where we believe there was drinking, based both on Favreau's behavior and based on the beer bottle that another guy is pressing into the cardboard Clinton's lips. Clinton herself, to her credit, laughed it off. Various feminists, though, around the internet and media are outraged at the photo. In his defense, Favreau says he was just looking for a quick rebound after his steady girlfriend, a life-size cutout of Hannah Montana, was seen leaving the party with Rahm Emanuel. Roxanne, as you know, Robert Gates is staying on as President Obama's Secretary of Defense. He's been given free rein to choose the weapon systems the military will buy. One option being floated by him is actually more 20th century than 21st. Actually, it's really a 19th century technology, but he's fond of it. What?
Bats.
Bats? That would be cool. And now the 102nd Flying Rodent Corps. Dun-da-da! Aye, the bats, say the enemies
the
of our
cavalry.
Nation.
The cavalry. I don't know.
No,
I need
not
a
quite.
Hint.
I'll give you a
I
hint.
Need a hint.
When I said he floated the idea, I mean he floated the idea.
Sailboats.
No.
Rafts.
Higher.
Kites.
No.
Blimps.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, prepare for the helium industrial complex. According to the Los Angeles Times, high-tech weapons systems now in development might be scrapped by Gates in favor of programs such as the one featuring small blimps equipped with automated sniper rifles. The initiative is known as Project Silent But Deadly.
What could go wrong with a blimp?
Gates is also looking into slingshots, flaming arrows, and blankets with plague virus. Senior defense aides say that the blimps are cost-effective, they're easily maintained, and they're safe from our foes on the battlefield as long as they don't look up.
Well, if they put, like, reader boards on the side advertising their product, people might just wave at them. And,
little banners after it?
Sure.
Will you marry me?
Sure.
Or else.
And the whole time they're like...
Paula, we've all seen them in movies and maybe been in a couple ourselves. Bar fights, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
According to the Wall Street Journal, one chain of restaurants in particular has had more than its share of violent, drunken confrontations. Which one?
Oh, Olive Garden.
No. Have you been involved in violent altercations?
You betcha. You get a little of the spinach avocado dip in ya.
No, not the Olive Garden.
One chain of restaurants.
I'll give you a hint. Those kids' birthday parties can get out of hand.
Chuck E. Cheese?
Chuck E. Cheese! Dead of iniquity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes, Chuck E. Cheese's, where a kid can be a traumatized kid. According to the Journal, the pizza restaurant more known for video games and children's birthday parties has, at least according to one Wisconsin cop, it's got more fights going on than the biker bar down the street. After one brawl at a Chuck E. Cheese in Milwaukee, the location had to ban knives, chains, screwdrivers, and glass cutters from the restaurant. Problem is, and this is true, most often drunken parents who are leaping to the defense of their children, who they feel truly deserve to get the high score in Star Wars Rebel Assault or whatever. Some local politicians say if the chain stopped serving alcohol, disorderly conduct would stop.
That's not true.
You don't think so?
No, because I don't drink, and I've certainly come to fisticuffs in a Chuck E. Cheese.
I think it's...
In the ball pit.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think it starts with parents finally driven mad by those animated dogs singing Beatles covers, and they go after them with a chair, and then it just kind of escalates.
It goes from there.
Yeah.
I didn't know you couldn't bring glass cutters in. Now what are we going to give for party favors?
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium, downtown Chicago, Illinois. You don't want to miss it because you don't know what's going to happen here. You can also visit the NPR shop to pick up your Wait Wait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Lauren. And I'm calling from Milwaukee, and I'm slightly afraid now to ever go to Chuck E. Cheese.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. Lauren, it's nice to have you with us. Carl Castle will now read you three news-related limericks, as he is wont to do, with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Yep.
Here's your first limerick.
Many drivers with gadgets do fumble, so our sirens are just a faint mumble. When they're going too fast, we let subwoofers blast, and they feel a low seismic...
rumble?
Right! Nothing tease the cops off more than when they come up behind you, hit their sirens, and you're going, you know, you're rocking out with your stereo or you're chatting on your cell phone, you don't hear their siren. Makes them crazy. Enter the rumbler. Turning on the rumbler emits low-frequency sound waves that are so strong they can be felt up to 200 feet away, says a spokesman for manufacturer Federal Signal. Quote, it feels like a tremor inside the vehicle. Police hope to use the rumbler to get attention and clear intersections for emergencies. They also deny that all those loose dental fillings lining the roads will be a traffic hazard.
That kind of, I mean, honestly, it sounds like fun.
Really? Oh, where's Roxanne? Oh, she's out again trying to draw the attention of traffic cops. You know, they catch you speeding, they pull up behind you, they turn on the rumbler, and they're like, oh, there's that brunette with that smile on her face again. What's she doing out here? Here's your next limerick.
You say jump, I say how high and where, while that other dog sleeps on your chair. But then he gets a snack, and you scratch that bum's back. Well, this dog thinks that's just not
fair.
Right. Do you ever think that your dog Sparky there is glaring at you from across the room as you cuddle with the other dog Fluffy on the couch? You're not imagining it. According to researchers at the University of Portsmouth in England, dogs know when they're treated unfairly. They experience complex emotions like jealousy, embarrassment, empathy, and guilt. Researchers asked dogs to extend a paw, and when they did, they rewarded one dog with a treat but not the other. The unrewarded dog caught on, refused to play, treated the other dog badly. Researchers say the findings should be viewed as a dangerous warning to pet owners. They say, yes, Scruffy may look cute in that embarrassing doggy Yoda costume. You got him for the party. But really, he is secretly plotting to kill you in your sleep. All right, Lauren, here's your last limerick.
Watching games via satellite dish, playing soccer is my pet's greatest wish. I tie cleats to his fins, kick the ball and begin. I'm teaching the game to my...
fish?
Right. The ad on the R2 Fish School website says it best, so we quote them. We know what you're thinking. This can't be real, but it is real. The R2 Fish School is offering a training DVD that you use to turn your average goldfish into an aquatic soccer superstar. You use little goldfish positive reinforcement techniques and generous helpings of fish flakes to teach your goldfish to play soccer with a little ball and do the limbo and fetch and do little slaloms. The company says it's offering two entertainment sources for just one price. One, the sight of goldfish doing tricks with a little soccer ball. And second, the sight of your loved one trying to train a goldfish to do tricks with a little soccer ball.
They also found that the fish get jealous.
Yes. Yeah. Carl, how did Lauren do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. She had three correct answers, so Lauren, you win our prize.
Well done. Woo-hoo! Congratulations. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Well, Tom Bodet has the lead, Peter. He has 3 points, but Paula Poundstone and Roxanne Roberts are tied for second. Each has 2.
All right, we have flipped a coin. Roxanne's elected to go second. That means, Paula, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Media powerhouse The Tribune Company announced this week that it was blanking.
Going bankrupt.
Right. As the new Health and Human Services Secretary, Blank will also oversee a new White House office on health reform.
Tom Daschle?
Right. 5 guards with the U.S. security firm Blank were charged with manslaughter in connection with the deaths of civilians in Iraq.
Blackwater?
Right. On Monday, the Supreme Court declined to review a case challenging Barack Obama's Blank.
Challenging Barack Obama's... no idea.
Citizenship. A California man fended off a knife-wielding attacker by arming himself with a blank.
Pen.
No, 2-foot-tall candy cane Lorne ornament. According to global health experts, by 2010, blank will replace heart disease as the leading cause of death worldwide.
Cancer.
Right. Oscar Mayer is now accepting applications for drivers of the blank.
Wienermobile.
Right. A wildlife park in China is offering volunteers a unique opportunity and a chance at $1,000 if they blank.
Live with wolves.
Exactly right. Paula, well done.
Wow.
Live, specifically, in an enclosed pen with 36 wild wolves. 1,700 people responded to the invitation to do this, to live in a makeshift tree shelter surrounded by a pack of wild wolves for 3 days. The 3 winners will take videos, write diaries, and learn the ancient Chinese art of screaming in pain while applying pressure to flesh wounds.
Wouldn't it be great if they got, like, just sort of a morose person who wrote in their diary but nothing about the wolves?
Carl, I think Paula did pretty well. How well did she do?
She did very well, Peter. 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Paula now has 14 points and the lead.
Dominant. Dominant.
I think I miscalculated here.
How so? You should have gone first.
Yeah, I should have gone first.
All right, well, let's see how you do. Roxanne, you're up next.
All right.
Here we go. Fill in the blank. On Monday, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told a judge in Guantanamo that he wanted to plead guilty to masterminding blank.
9/11.
Right. Clashes between police and demonstrators plunged blank into turmoil this week.
Greece.
Right. Transition sources say that Nobel laureate Steve Chu is Obama's choice to head the Department of blank.
Energy.
Right. A Minnesota appeals court determined that blank cannot withdraw his guilty plea in a restroom sex sting.
Larry Craig.
Right. Despite the hard economic times, reports indicate there's still plenty of work to be had for blanks.
I know this.
Gift wrappers.
Nativity camels. On Monday, Christy Hefner announced that she was stepping down as the CEO of blank.
Playboy.
Right. Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker in Dark Knight received a blank nomination this week.
Golden Globe.
Right. 1,500 people were evacuated from a New Zealand dance school's performance of Sleeping Beauty when the ballerinas blanked backstage.
When they knocked over the dry ice machine.
No, when they used too much hairspray. Audience members at the Maureen Ack School of Dance were not prepared to be gassed with Aquanet. When the 200 ballerinas went backstage for a costume change, they all whipped out their cans of hairspray and went nuts. They caused fire alarms to go off, and they caused a gaping hole to open in the ozone layer directly above the theater. Carl, how did Roxanne do?
Well, Roxanne had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 and is tied with Paula for the lead.
All right.
Boy.
I would not want to be Tom Bodet right now.
I'll sell you my seat.
We'll turn you to the man who is Tom Bodet. Carl, how many does Tom need to win?
6 correct answers.
6, can you do it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go, Tom. You sound confident. On last week's Meet the Press, President-elect Obama admitted to falling off the wagon during the campaign and occasionally blanking.
Smoking.
Right, after 6 days, workers at a window and door factory in blank ended their sit-in.
In Chicago.
Right, a Walmart employee in New York leaked to the Associated Press News that the store will begin selling blanks.
iPhone.
Right. On Monday, a military jet preparing for a landing at a Marine base crashed into a residential neighborhood in blank.
San Diego.
Right. Editors at Australia's Ralph magazine breathed a sigh of relief after their missing blanks showed up at a Melbourne dock.
They're missing models.
They're missing shipment of 130,000 inflatable breasts. In the January issue of her magazine, blank said she is embarrassed that her weight is back up to 200 pounds.
Oprah.
Right. Polish police were informed about an illegal logging site in a nature reserve, but no charges were filed when police determined the illegal loggers were, in fact, blank.
How come I always get the Polish police kind of questions at the end, when the loggers were actually logging.
No, we're a gang of beavers. Environmentalists found that the 20 stacked tree trunks and others not for cutting in the protected site, they were outraged and immediately went to the cops. Officials followed a trail of evidence and soon had their culprits a pack of wild beavers, blatantly ignoring logging regulations and building a dam without a permit. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
He needed 6 correct answers. He had 5 correct answers. So with 14 points, Roxanne Roberts and Paula Poundstone are this week's co-champions.
I can't high-five. I'm high-fiving Paris.
Well done.
That was a high-scoring lightning round all the way,
it was.
The way around.
You guys did very well. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, how will Barack Obama's Senate successor finally be chosen? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations. And the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to build United States leadership on global warming at home and abroad at pewtrusts.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our intern is Ann Cadigan. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our house manager, Don Hall. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Other engineers include Lorna White, Les Talarczyk, and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac and Jewel Dulce at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced this week by Philip Klaperick, Nihar Patel, and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, how will Obama's successor be chosen? Paula Poundstone.
In order to reverse the cycle we have going currently, it'll be awarded to the best-behaved prisoner at Joliet.
Save time. Be more efficient. Roxanne Roberts.
To avoid any suggestion of judgment or influence peddling, the Chicago Cubs will randomly select a season ticket holder to fill the seat.
And Tom Beaudet.
The Thursday after the winter solstice, a star will rise in the east, guiding 3 wise men on nativity camels to a place somewhere in Illinois. And while the media focuses on that, Obama will show his successor to her Senate seat.
Well, if Obama's successor is chosen in any of those ways, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Tom Beaudet. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.